Can you hear me in the back?
Yes.
You can hear me well. Good. Thank you. Well, first, I'm going to take you to a honeyed land. Because the theme of your day is the mythologies of Wales. Touching on the mythologies of Wales. So let's immerse ourselves in a honeyed land that perhaps never was. You see, all of the rivers that now enter into Cardigan Bay. There's the Avon Darron, Avon Soch, Avon Wen, Avon Dwyfor, Glaslyn, Mawddach, Dwyrig. All of the Avonydd, all of those great rivers, they didn't empty into the sea in the Morrids where they are now. No, they held hands and they gathered as one mighty river. And that river snaked its way out over a honeyed golden land. It was a lowland. And if you'd have stood on the beaches of Cricieth now, you'd have seen stretching out as far as the horizon, as far as you could compass in every direction. Fields stretching out, golden corn, cattle at pasture, shambling in rich pasture, and orchards hanging heavy with apples at autumn time. And the king of that land, his name was Gwyddno Garanhir. He's sometimes called Gwyddno of the White Horses. And he was the king of this honeyed land. And it was said that this land was the basket which fed the rest of Wales. And so rich were the people on this land that they were able to build a dike to keep Dylan and his white horses out. You see, the land was so low-lying, that every now and again, Dylan, the master of the sea, the lord of the sea, the girdler of the earth, he would come with his white horses on a stormy day and rush over the cornfields. But Gwyddno Garanhir, he built a mighty wall, a mere, that stretched all the way from that land we call Cardigan now, Pembrokeshire, all the way to Ynys Enlli, to keep Dylan and his white horses back. And it was said one time that the custodian of a great tower that stood over the gates through which this mighty river fled out into the sea, the custodian was called Saith Yenin, Tywysog Saith Yenin, Prince Saith Yenin. And it was Saith Yenin's duty, twice every day, to ring a great bronze bell, a great booming bell, that hung in the tower over those great gates. And he'd take an oaken staff, and when the tide was coming in, he'd take the oaken staff and he'd ring the great bell, and the great bell would echo out to every corner of the kingdom. And 20 strong men would put down their tools, their scythes and their sickles, and they would put their shoulders to the beam, and they would close the two great oaken doors so that Dylan and his white horses couldn't come into the city and couldn't come into the land. And it was said of those great oak doors that they were carved with all the constellations of the heavens on the eastward side, but that they were faced with bronze on the westward side, so that they caught the light of the setting sun. And one day it was when the princess of that land was coming of age, and there was to be a great feast in the feasting hall. And anybody was gathered there and was invited. And Saith Yenin looked down come evening time, and he could see people streaming across the fields, bringing with them wild boar and salmon and great deer, carried down to the feast. And he could see every time the doors were flung open to the feasting hall, he could see that were rose red cheeked, munching at the tables, and he could hear the harp. He could smell the basting of meat over the fire. And he looked out and he could see that the sea was way out, and there wasn't a ripple of a wind. And the sun was setting out over Ynys Enlli. And he thought to himself, well, this evening I won't be missed for a short time on the tower. And so he made his way down as the sky brightened with stars. And he made his way to the feasting hall. And when he pushed in, there was the smell of smoke. Smoke hung low over the tables. There was mead being cupped out, and the servants, not noticing who it was, as he scuttled into the shadows, filled his mead cup. And before long, he was joining in with the revelry. But outside, if you'd have been outside, as one young lad whose name was Gwynhoidl, this young lad, he heard curlews and lapwings and gulls and gannets and seabirds of all description flying overhead. And he went out and he had a look, and he could see the stars. He could see the constellations rising from the east to the west. And he could see the flickering flocks of birds, seabirds, fleeing inland. And when seabirds fly inland, it's a sure sign of one thing. And he went up onto the tower to watch it coming. And sure enough, a great shadow came from the south. And all the stars were blown out as the shadow reached over. And then the lightning. And he saw in the light of the lightning that there was nobody in the tower. And he ran on top of that mead. He ran on top of that great wall until he came to the tower to rouse the watcher. But there was nobody there. And he took the oaken staff, but he was a young boy, and he could hardly put it in his arms. It was a heavy staff. And by that time, the bell was swinging. There was a corwint, and you know what a corwint is in Welsh. Okay. And the flickering of lightning about him, and he sped down to the city to warn them that the city gates were open, and the white horses of Dulan, the king of the sea, were on their way in over the sands. And he pushed open the doors of the feasting hall, and he entered in. And there were people snoring, cheeks on the spilt wine on the tables, and the smoke hung low. And he went from one to the other, and the other to the next, but none of them were roused. And so he went up to the bedchamber where the young maiden was sleeping. And as he went and woke her, there was a flash of lightning. They went to the window, they looked out. And in that moment, as they looked out over the city, who should be coming in through the city gates, whipping the horses to a gallop, but Dulan of the Sea, bringing his white chariots and white horses in through the city gates, carrying the great bronze gates on his back. And they fled into the streets, to the alleyways, bringing down columns and bringing down earthen walls and stone walls and timber colonnades. All the palisades of the city were broken, and the horses cantered up to the feasting hall. And then Gwynhoidl knew there was nothing to it then but to go down to the stable, and he saddled the horse and the young woman behind him, and they sped off. He whipped the horse to a gallop. Through the cornfields all that black night they went, and all behind them they could hear the shh of the sea flattening the great fields. And the horse did not stop until it started to rise, until it started to climb the foothills of Ardudwy. And when it could go no further, the horse, exhausted, fell on its side, and the two young people, they sheltered behind its great belly. And all that night the wind whistled overhead and the storm crackled. And in the morning, when they woke up, well, Gwynhoidl, he looked over the belly of the horse. O dan y môr a'i donau, mae llawer ddinas glos, yn gwrando ar y clychau, yn canu gyda'r nos. Drwy ofer ysgeilistod y gwyliwr yn y tŵr, a'i clychau gyntre'r gweled o'r golwg dan y dŵr. I went yesterday morning. I had two wonderful journeys yesterday morning. I'll tell you both. And the first one was catching the tide at Porthnagel, my local beach, which is 4 miles stretch long. From my house at the top of Munithu, I can look out and I can see the sea on all three sides. I can see where Cantred Gwaelor is. But to my east, I look over the vast stretch of Porthnagel. And since the January storms, there have been black patches like sea kelp all along the side of the dunes there. And if you go there and catch the early morning tide, or whatever time the tide is, Dullan and his white horses are way out, then you'll see that it's peat ground, usually covered by the sand and the sea over it. And if you kneel in that peat ground, you'll see that there are broken branches, roots, still with bark on them. And if you look even closer, you'll see that there are hazelnuts in amongst the roots, little hazelnuts. And if you take a little knife out, and if you prize that little bit of peat free of its hazelnut, the hazelnut is golden brown, but within moments it turns black. The age of 7, 8, 9,000 years comes upon it. It's been sleeping in the peat all of that time. And sometimes you'll find hazelnuts with little scratch marks on them. Little holes and scratch marks. And if I was an ecologist, I would be able to tell what species of mouse ate the kernel of that nut. The same mice that raided the barns of Cantre Gwaelod all that time ago. You see, these stories, these mythologies, they're told to us in school as that's like that song. About Cantre Gwaelod. They're told as folk tales. And we live in an age of science, the third age, the age of science. And many of these stories, well, I'll give you an example. I love a place behind where I live. There's an old burial mound there, an old Bronze Age burial mound, several of them. But one of them's a little undisturbed still. And I love to go up there and watch the morning light. And one day I was on my way back down the mountain, and who should come but Margaret Griffith. Now, is Margaret Griffith here? No. Bryn Beddain? No. Ydy yma? You're not here, are you, Margaret? Well, I'm safe to tell the story. Because perhaps you know Margaret Griffith, an eminent historian, and sometimes she brings people on top of Munithu, which has studied a lot of the family history's there. She brings people up to have a look at some of the remains of, there's an old Neolithic axe factory and the Bronze Age cairns, Iron Age ring forts or enclosures there. And I saw her coming with a little troop of people behind her, and we met. And she introduced me and she said, "This is David. Now I've told you what happened here on the mountain, and David will tell you what may have happened here on the mountain." So I'm pigeonholed into that. May have the Celtic twilight imagination time, maybe. But it gives, for the young child that never grew out of me, it gives the flesh and blood to archaeology and to understanding our world. And they say that which a man believes becomes his reality. And so much of our science is informed by our time. I was once told by, you remember Errol Rothwell Hughes?
Oh, yes.
Wonderful man, Errol Rothwell Hughes. And he described the library of Sir John Wynapwydir one time. And he described the library, and there were learned books. He was quite a scientist of his Renaissance time. Sir John Wynapwydir. And he described the books that he would have had, early maps of the world, and about the physician and the human body, and things that were burgeoning in science of the Renaissance time. And beside it, a book on how to catch unicorns. And I can imagine Sir John taking the book down. He might have read something about, you know, the veins of the body, and then taking next down, he got a bit tired of that and took out the unicorn book and pored over it and wondered about where he might catch a unicorn, perhaps. Well, we'd dismiss it, you know, and it's funny to laugh at those things now. As people in 500 and 1,000 years' time will have a little giggle and laugh at our own science and at our own conclusions, so coloured by our own prejudices and our own limits of knowledge. But the stories, those stories of Branwen, of Bendigeidfran, of Matholwch, of Pwyll Pendefig Dyfed, of Pryderi, of Rhiannon, those stories will still be here in 1,000 years' time. And there, the kernel of that nut will still ring out true. The story I've shared with you first thing this morning, the story of Pantref Gwaelod, the flooding of the Lower Hundreds, it's our Atlantis story in Wales. But I've heard the same story, verbatim, practically, but with different character names, from a young woman from Donegal. And I went up to her at the end of her performance at a festival, and I said, "Do you know, that was a Welsh story you told there." And she said, "Oh, no, 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 it's a traditional story of Donegal." And we had a few minutes together of trying to own it, but it was fruitless. And I've heard the same story in Cornwall, I've heard the same story in Brittany, and I've heard the same story very closely, the same story from a troupe of musicians and a storyteller from Sri Lanka. Now, what is this? I give you another example. There was once a Welsh king. I won't tell you the whole story. It'd be lovely to share that sometime. But I'll tell you the closing stages. You see, this giant of a man, they'd been battling for 7 long years. If you looked out over west from Wales over that 7 long years, you'd have seen nothing but a pallid colour of smoke hanging low over the Wicklows, over the whole of Ireland. And by the end of that 7 years, there was only a few Irish and a few Welsh left. And one among them was a king, a mighty king. So great was he that he walked over from Wales all the way over to Ireland and brought his fleet with him. Like a great mountain, they saw him coming with 2 great fiery lakes for eyes and a forest of masts behind him. Well, 7 years after that landing and the crossing of Shannon and the battles with Matholwch, the King of Ireland, Bendigeidfran took a poisoned dart in the heel. And they severed his head and they brought it back to Wales. Well, the story goes on from there, and it's such a wonderful story, but I have to leave it there. But I will tell you of another great siege. A great siege, and if I could sing, I would sing of a beautiful city, of a broad, accommodating streets, and I would sing of 2 great Scian gates, embossed with bronze that reflected the light of the setting sun. And this city had been besieged for 10 long years, and the greatest among the warriors who besieged that city was a man they called the Swift Runner. In Greek, his name means no lips, because he did not suckle at his mother's breast. And this Swift Runner, he was unbeatable on the field of battle. But you know how he was killed? Well, they'd said that when he was little, his mother feared for his fate, and so she took him to the broad banks of the River Styx, the river of forgetfulness, the river between this world and the world of Anu, the world of Hades. And she took him and she bathed the baby from head to foot in the waters of the River Styx. And wherever the water touched his skin became impregnable to arrow, to sword, to battle axe. But there was one place where the water did not reach. The place where she held him, his heel. Achilles, Bendigeidfran. They echo through time these histories of humanity. These heroes, these archetypal stories, where do they come from? There was footprints found last year. I think it was on Norfolk somewhere. Someone more learned in the ways of archaeology will correct me, but there was a group of archaeologists alerted to the footprints, and they went to see it. And in between the tides, before they were washed away, they took some recordings, some prints of it. And later they discovered that these were prints much older than they expected. They were 800,000 years old. Footprints on the mud, 800,000 years old. And not only that, there were a family walking on the mud. They could tell somehow they weren't hunting because they were meandering. A family on the mud, 800,000 years ago. 10 occupations of Britain ago. We are the 10th occupation of Britain. The ice has come and has scoured all that we have brought in between away, ground it to dust, and it will come again and grind all of this to dust. Nothing will remain of what we did here. The next ice age. The 10th occupation. So what remains of us? Well, I think those stories remain of us. And there are stories we call our own in Wales. And I've learned as I've grown older and become more interested in stories, that these stories are common to all of us. People say often, where the place I work, do you know, it feels like I'm coming home. And they come from all over, from South Korea to South America, and they come back to the Llyn rich with stories. And we share the stories, and they say, do you know, I feel as if I'm coming home. There's an imprint in us that's common to all of these stories. One of the most famous ones on the Llyn is Brenin March, King. Well, if you're not understand Welsh, I won't tell you. But there's a story in Greek about a king. In fact, about two gods. Pan, the god of nature, was having a contest with Apollo, the sun god, the god of the sun, the god of light. And Apollo was playing on his lyre, and Pan was playing on his pipes. And the competition was judged by Timolus. Timolus was a great mountain, and the mountain unfurled its ears and listened to the two gods in the glade playing against each other. And Timolus, at the end of the contest, says, "The greatest musician is Apollo." And from behind the trees, there was a mortal king, a mortal man that had been listening. And he piped up and he said, "No, that's nonsense. The best musician is Pan any day." And Apollo turned then, and he saw Midas standing there. And he said, "You have the ears of an ass." And sure enough, Midas had to hide his ears. And then you can follow on the story in Welsh. Because, you know, Midas, Brenin March, one and the same. He had a barber that used to come and cut his hair every month. And he would have to take off his crown and unfurl his silks. And of course, his ears would sprout out. Now, that's a whole different tale again. You have to come to Felinacha, to the roundhouse at Felinacha, if you want to hear all of these stories. We've not time to tell them all. But I was wondering, do you know, the stories that we tell, well, the past that we imagine, well, they're things that we like to think that people were like at that time, and the stories, we can choose them from a whole array of stories. We have favourites. I remember in my youth, in the 1980s in secondary school, the most heroic man was Owain Glyndŵr. And, you know, people had their reasons for idolatry of Owain Glyndŵr. But they chose that one hero from recent times. But there have been other heroes that could have had other messages. So we choose our own heroes, our own stories of our own time. And perhaps one story that's little told now amongst maybe the younger generation like myself, and am I still a young generation? No. Younger generation than myself. There's a story that Carol's children and myself heard, and they were my first stories, and I loved them. This is a book that my grandfather, who was a missionary in north of India, he carried about with him. And the first lines of this story, they read, "An y dechreuad, y creodd Duw y nefoedd a'r daear. A'r daear, and you know, Bereshit bara Elohim, et hashamayim vehet haaretz," in Hebrew. "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." An old story. And if you listen to it, it's like the beginning of some great blockbuster film. In fact, they've just made Noah, haven't they, out of that story. But for nigh on 1,500 years in Wales, this has probably been the best known story. The Mabinogi was discovered again. It was written down, I think, in medieval times, forgotten much of it, the details, and then rediscovered. And now it's our national story. But this was our national story too for over 1,000 years. And it's a treasure trove of amazing stories. And now many of us have chosen to put the book aside and to listen instead to the Bhagavad Gita, to the Shamane of the Persians, to the stories of ancient Egypt, to other places. We've become adolescents and turned our backs on the parents and gone and discovering the world's stories in a different way. In festivals up and down Wales, where you hear stories, you'll hardly ever hear stories from this book. They've become, I don't know what they've become, but I still love those stories. And they're one of my main inspirations. And I find amongst the Mabinogi and amongst all the other stories, echoes of stories in there, of heroes in there. The next place I want to take you to that I went yesterday, early, early, before dawn, 4 o'clock in the morning, I went to a wood. And the stars were bright in the morning, and that's the reason why I went in the morning, to catch the light. Because it's a little known wood, but I wear this jumper in honour of it today. Because you can smell the wood 100 yards away this time of year. You can smell it. And if you go over the gate, it's an old rusty gate and you can't open it, you go over the gate, through the nettles and thistles, and then over the barbed wire fence and into paradise, into Eden. And early in the morning, when there's no light on it, it's lilac. It's lilac. And to see it in the full moon is even more beautiful. And on the 14th of May, it will be full moon. And if it's a starry, bright sky, you know where I'll be that night. But early in the morning, if you go into that wood and you sit yourself down, I've got a place for a fire. I've got a tinder box buried in the turf, and I've got hot chocolate in my flask. And I sit myself down by a fire and I listen to the dawn chorus. And there's a place in that wood, it's on a rise of a hill, and if you look out over east, you can see there's like a theatre. Beech leaves, just the fluttering first yellowing beech leaves, form the curtains to the theatre. And beyond it, there are forests. They're little copses, but by virtue of the wood and where it is, it looks like there's a vast forest stretching from Llyn all the way to Eryri. And this time of year, the sun is waking over the saddle of Cri Coch, and at midsummer, it goes beyond the Rwydfa, and it lifts up like a chalice it is beyond the Rwydfa. And the sun rises there. And before the sun, you know, if you've been up on a hill early in the morning, before the warmth of the sun, there comes a rush of wind. And this time of year, if you go into the woods, in the bluebell carpet of the woods, with the young beech leaves barely unfurled. Then the first dawn wind catches them, and there's a rush through the wood just before the dawn, and then up comes Apollo, the god of the sun, riding on his chariot, and he flames the whole of the tops of the forests in between. And for a brief moment, I am in Eden again. I am at the time of Genesis. I am right at the beginnings of the earth, the time when God's Spirit brooded over the waters. And he said, "Let there be light." And he saw that the light was good. And he separated the light from the darkness. And he called the light day and the darkness night. And there was morning and there was evening and there was day. And I remember those stories. I remember those stories as the light comes flooding in. And there is magic in the world. I see it in the colour of the bluebells in the morning. And by 8:30, 9 o'clock, well, they've become our ordinary world. Beautiful still. But for those half hour at dawn and at sunset, there is magic in the woods there. And all of those stories that live between me and Arari, of the sleeping king, of Arthur and his knights, of Castell Marchen, the king of the horses' years, of Gwyddno Garanhir and his white horses, and the horses of Dylan that came galloping over his land, they come to life. They come to life. I see them in my imaginative eye. And I am heartened. And it feeds me. And so I wanted to share something with you of the place where I live, how I see it, woven through with history, with stories. And you see it in a very different way. Once you know, or once you begin to understand its history. You know, I cannot go through Cwmidwell without hearing the rumbling of the glaciers. I spent some time in the Antarctic working for a while, and so I know what a landscape looked like that's covered with ice, half a mile thick. And I look over my Wales, and I look over the place where my house is, and in the garden I take out boulders, shiny boulders, ground down and taken from the Cairngorms. This land is full of stories. And once you know the stories, be they geology stories, or be they mythologies or archaeology, they colour the land, they give it flesh and blood and beating heart. And scratches, and I carry it into the bluebell wood sometimes. And like the Greeks, I let the wind play through it sometimes. And I've strung up a tree there, it's a hazel tree, and I've strung it up with harp guts. And the hazel tree, if you take a rope to it and take the branch that I've strung up to and take it down and windlass it up on a windy morning, to hear the wind play through those strings, it is true magic. So, I hope I've coloured the day for you, blown a bit of that mythological air through you, and prepared you for the wonderful speakers that you'll have for the rest of the day. But I thank you for listening to me and for sharing.